Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome back to another edition of the Gegenpod. I'm joined by Michael Bridges, Mark Schwarzer and Thomas Sorensen as we look back at all the cup sets from the weekend. Nuno Tavares's tantrum as they share stories of footballers that threw some similar ones back in the day. We look at our transfer talk as the January window is open. Where will Riley McGree go? Will he link back up with Ange Postecoglou at Celtic? And then we look forward to a mouth-watering weekend of Premier League action, including Man City taking on Chelsea, Tottenham up against Arsenal. There's so much football coming up on Optus Sport. And it all kicks off now on the game. What's happening, football fans? Welcome back to another edition of the Gegenpod. I'm very happy this morning because I'm joined by all three of our guests. They've all turned up for this one. Michael Bridges, Mark Schwarzer and Thomas Sorensen back home in Melbourne as well. But Bridgie, I'm going to kick it off with you because it's been a huge week for your hometown. The Toon signed Kieran Trippier. That was a pretty big signing. La Liga winner. And then they've just gone and bombed out of the FA Cup at home to Cambridge. What's the mood like up there?
It is all part of the master plan for Newcastle United. What a week.
Oh, here we go.
Trippier signing, can you believe it? Absolutely incredible. Lots of talk that there's others to follow suit because they're going to need it. And I saw the headlines, the comments coming out of Newcastle United. We can now concentrate on the league. There you go. It was always going to happen, the old cliches. But it was a terrible performance against Cambridge, I've got to say. And there was only one man that was happy, and I've heard him all over the world, and that is Max Rushton. You know, we've worked with us on Optus Sport. He does the Talk Sport in the UK. He is one very, very happy man. And all he keeps saying is Newcastle United nil, Cambridge United won. So, yeah, it's been an up-and-down roller coaster ride, and I'm sure the boys have got something to say about that as well. But what an interesting week in the North East.
Schwartzy, I mean, you had Newcastle and Burnley both out on the same day. Was that a bit of a window into who's going to get relegated later this season?
No, I think it was more about... firstly, obviously a combination of the fact that the clubs are in the position they're in because they are having a torrid time. So to lose against lower opposition obviously tells you they're not in a good place. But there is a sense of what Bridgie said there. Even obviously he was saying it with a bit of a cheeky smile and side to it was that they can concentrate on the league. Geez, they need to, both of them, because you know they're in a long haul, long fight. And it's going to come down to the wire for both of them. Well, they're going to hope it's going to come down to the wire because at the moment, they're not careful. You know, they could be ended up being cut off at the back there and already gone very, very soon.
And Tommy, they've signed Kieran Trippier. It's a pretty good signing, but I think they're still a long way away from where they need to be. They've now been linked to Aubameyang. They've been linked to Aaron Ramsey, Luka Digne from Everton. Who is the right next signing for Eddie Howe to get them out of this mess?
I think they need a striker. Obviously, Callum Wilson is out with a calf injury. I think he's a huge miss. I think there's talk this morning about a young French striker from Reims, Ikiteke, Chris Woods even from Burnley. But they need goals. And you could see that against Cambridge as well. But what a great story. You know, you got Mark Bonner, who's never played football, managing the team at 36. You know, he came up through the ranks from their under-8s. And this is what the FA Cup is about. So yes, Newcastle are in strife, but I agree with the lads that I think Newcastle, compared to Burnley, are in a much better position to, you know, to move out of that bottom three.
There's two ways Newcastle United are going to survive this, and I'm saying this a bit tongue in cheek, but a bit of realism about it as well. There's two things talking about. They're either going to sign big, and they're going to get some of them players you've just mentioned. The other way they're going to do it, there is huge talk that Tarkowski of Burnley is on the radar massively, and there's huge talk that Chris Wood, you just mentioned, the New Zealand striker from Burnley. So Burnley are in a massive dilemma here. They're going to lose two of their best players. If not, they might lose the player Me as well, who's another defender. Newcastle are either going to buy their way out of trouble and send one of the other boys down, or Burnley have got a massive decision to see. We hold on to them, we try and fight survival. And, you know, it's a massive test of the character of Burnley. And if they do let them go, I can see Sean Dyche having enough of it and saying, you know, that is me done. He'll want the players to fight the battle. So it's going to be an interesting month. 21 days left to see what happens and if any of this materialises.
They can't let him go. That bottom line. They can't.
If agree.
Burnley
agree.
Let them go, you're right. I mean, Sean Dyche, unless he's given a big lump sum to go and buy some reinforcements, which they've never done before, that they would be absolutely mad and would be waving a white flag already saying, right, we're done with and we're going to get relegated, so why not just, you know, cut our loss right now and cash in on our main assets. No chance in the world should they be giving selling those players. I've heard a rumour, and I don't know how, I mean, I've heard it from a reliable source, is that Newcastle actually don't have a lot of money at their disposal. I've actually heard that the Saudi backing they supposedly have is part of that consortium, but they're there more as a financial guarantee rather than actually prepared to throw in a lot of money into the club. I've heard they've got money to spend on wages, but not necessarily out in the transfer window and spend big. So it'll be very, very interesting to see how this January month plays out.
Well, I'll tell you what, if you're coming out with a statement saying you're going to win the Premier League in 5 years and they've got no money, then somebody's lying. So it's going to be unbelievable to see what goes on. I totally agree.
Tommy, there's a club that I think has more money than people realise at the moment. They're playing now. Your former club, Aston Villa, just had a second disallowed goal here against Man United for another tight offside. But they're down 1-0 at the moment, still in with the cup. What have you made for them? Because Philip Coutinho came out of nowhere. He was being linked with the likes of Chelsea, a move back to Liverpool potentially. Villa have swooped in. Same with Luca Digne now at Everton. Chelsea's been linked with him, and yet Villa seem like the leaders who are favourites to sign him. So where's this transfer strategy come from? How much of it is Steven Gerrard influenced bringing a player like Philip Coutinho's former teammate across to the club, and how big of a coup is that for Villa?
I think it's huge, and I think you can only put it down to the Steven Gerrard effect. I think what he's brought in, the name, the connections. You know, he played with Coutinho at Liverpool. I think it's the only reason why Coutinho is there, and it's probably the missing link. Yes, Grealish left, and they've really struggled to fill that gap. Buendia has come in. He hasn't lived up to the same expectations quite yet. So I think Coutinho, midfielder who scores goals, sets up goals, you know, he's done that forever. Yes, it didn't quite work out at Barcelona, but, you know, a year ago he was at Bayern Munich, did well there. So and he's only 29, so he's still got some good years ahead of him. So I think it's a great signing. And it just shows that, you know, that it gives you that little bit of an advantage that with a former player and name like Steven Gerrard at the helm.
All I'd say, though, Tommy, is I don't think Coutinho had a good time at Bayern. That's why he found himself on the outer, and that's why they didn't keep him there longer. He did okay at the beginning and then fell away a lot. He struggled to find another club. Couldn't get into the Barcelona side anymore. At a time when they're desperate for players of quality to try and take them out of the mess that they're in, right? So whether it's a financial thing now that they've shown in the door, I'd be interested to see what you guys think. I've got a thought on how this move is going to play out with Coutinho. I want to know what you guys think. Do you think it's going to be a good signing for Villa?
I am going to say that it always helps when he picked Steven Gerrard as one of his favourite midfielders in his 11, Coutinho did. Stevie's obviously seen that and gone, this is going to be an easy one to get hold of. You know, he's a fan of mine, blah, 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 they play together. However, I don't think it's going to work out because the player that Tommy mentioned there, Buendia, he's been playing on the left-hand side in behind Watkins. That's the Coutinho system. Can they play the two of them? I don't think he's got the work ethic to match Stevie's style and philosophy. So I'm going to say it's not going to happen. It's not going to be a nice transition. I hope I'm wrong because I do like Villa.
But as a Villa fan, I'm going to be the glass half full guy. I think it's going to work. Yes, Steven Gerrard has a bit of a puzzle with, you know, he can't really play both Ings and Watkins up front. But I think he's just going to give them what they've been missing. Just he's going to supply Watkins with the balls, and then Ings can be sort of the guy off the bench that can make a difference. So yeah, for me, it's going to make Villa a better team in my eyes.
So why couldn't he do it at Barcelona? Why couldn't he have better players around him? Why couldn't he do it at Bayern when he had better players around him? Why is he going to do it?
I don't know him, but
look at him poking the cage there, just trying to stare us up. No.
This is what this podcast is all about. Let's have a discussion about it. No, again, I think he seems like a player from a distance that needs to be in the right, you know, frame of mind. He needs the support. I think he's been left out a bit at Barcelona in the shadow of Messi, the pressure that club offers. I think with Steven Gerrard, he knows he's got a manager that's got full faith in him, that knows him well, knows his strengths and weaknesses. And I think Steven Gerrard is going to get the best out of him. So that's my that's what gives me confidence in this move, that connection between the two is going to make the difference.
After hearing Tommy's claim there and what he just showed me the product there, I'm taking it. I'm going to say he's going to be a success now.
Yeah, that was well sold there.
What about you, Claude?
I look at it and go, there's a number of clubs that could have taken him. Liverpool could have taken him. There's a number of teams, bigger clubs that could have gone, you know what, actually, especially Liverpool with the connection and everything else, and they've chosen not to, and they've had a number of options to do so. I'm going to say he's going to struggle. I think he's going to find it. I think it's a last chance saloon for him at a good level over here. I think he's going to struggle. I think his confidence is so shot. I don't know. I think he needs more than Steven Gerrard to get him back on track again. I hope I'm wrong, because what a wonderful player he was when he was at Liverpool.
Mm. Well, I mean, he was a wonderful player when he was the creative outlet, right? And then he went to a Barcelona side where he was just one of many, same at Bayern Munich. And I think if now he is in a side, which, not to say anything about Villa, but if he is the creative outlet and he's given that role where he can kind of stay forward, play that classic 10 role, maybe that will suit him more than the systems at Barca and Bayern, which require him to be a little bit more of an all-round player and fit into a system. I don't know. I'm trying to look at it half full as well. Let's see, because he is a phenomenal talent and we miss him in the Prem. So let's hope he comes back with a good impact. I want to talk about Arsenal, who have also been front and centre in the transfer headlines. Their former captain, Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang, it looks like he's going to be leaving before the end of the month. He's linked with absolutely everyone. I even saw a couple of Twitter rumours linking him to the A-League at one point. I want to speak about their early exit from the FA Cup as well, away at Nottingham Forest. And particularly one moment, Nuno Tavares was subbed off after 33 minutes. Boys, Bridgie, firstly, have you ever been hooked early in the first half? And secondly, do you think a player deserves that? Or should they be given the 45 minutes at least? Or if they're playing bad enough, you can hook them after 10?
The only reason I got hooked in the first half, I was playing for Bolton Wanderers reserves. And quite
even
funny
worse.
Stories.
In the reserve, you got hooked.
This is brilliant.
You must have
Bolton
been
Wanderers
absolutely dog shite.
You love this one, I swear. This is priceless. I remember it was the first club I went to where we had to take tablets before the game and before training. We'd take a cod liver oil tablet, or you'd take some form of protein tablet and a caffeine tablet. And it was always in your little container. Now, before the reserve game, somebody had either pranked me or somebody had actually made a mistake. And there was three caffeine tablets in my container. And all I remember, after 20 minutes of the game started, my stomach just went. And it was, I've got to find a toilet as quick as I can. And I remember breaking wind next to a guy called Callum Davenport, a defender. And he looked at me and went, "Are you all right, mate?" And I said, "Mate, I am struggling." He said, "That is wrong what you've just done." And I ran off the field and I sat in the toilet in the dressing room for about 10 minutes. I came back out on the field. They'd already made a substitution. I actually got yellow carded by the referee for not acknowledging. I didn't even know you had to tell a referee you were leaving the field of play. And, mate, I was absolutely violent. Like, I was really, really bad, in a bad place with shakes and, like, this caffeine hit. And I probably sat in the toilet for about 3 hours, mate, and
he
lost
was 38
about three
years
stone.
Old by that time. He didn't know that he had to ask the referee whether he can come back
hey,
on
but
the
it was
pitch
quite,
or not.
I'll tell you what, it was...
You
it was,
are on
was
the
quite,
ball, mate. On
it
the
was
ball.
Quite a dodgy. It was quite a dodgy scenario what happened, because they turned out to be quite dangerous,
oh
them tablets,
God,
because Bridget, there was a player
that
actually took
deeper,
one.
Mate.
I'll tell you. I got
subbed
in a Resi game. Yeah, there you go.
Okay.
Shorty, I doubt you guys as keepers would have experienced this, but looking at Tavares' response, is that fair that he's responded in that way? Do you have to give a player a certain amount of time, or if you're just not good enough, the manager's entitled to hook you at any point of the game?
Listen, I think it takes a certain type of manager to be brave enough to make that decision. There are not a lot. I have to say, I mean, I know when I was at Chelsea, Jose Mourinho did it, and he was actually really, really good at it. in terms of the way he dealt with it. So the player was so annoyed and he wouldn't react to it. And then afterwards he put his arm around the player and explained to him why he made the substitution. And he said, it's got nothing to do with you. Sometimes it had something to do with him. He just goes, well, you just didn't do what you were asked. You know, it didn't work out for you. It was one of those days. But I believe in you. You'll be back again. You'll get another opportunity. So I think it depends on how the manager deals with it. So I've seen it before at Chelsea. I mean, I've had it where, actually a moment where I thought the manager was going to take someone off and he didn't. That was when I was at Fulham with Roy Hodgson and Jimmy Bullard was an incident. We were down 2-0 at half-time and twice we conceded and both times it was Jimmy Bullard's man through midfield. He just basically stopped and watched him run and get on the end of it and score. And he refused to accept any responsibility whatsoever that it was his man. And then basically it was a tantrum. It was like an 8-year-old having a tantrum, or probably even less. That's unfair on 8-year-olds. Probably like a 6-year-old or a 4-year-old having a tantrum. He got up and basically went, oh, I'm not having it, and stormed off. And as he went past all the set plays that were stuck up on the wall, ripped them all down. And like he missed a couple, went back and ripped them all off, and then stormed off into the toilets. It was, wow. Honestly, it was like it was a child moment.
And he didn't get hooked.
But, he didn't get hooked, which I was blown away by.
But I must say, like, this is what managers are there for, to make those tough decisions. And I think as players as well, like we've all played in games where there's been players on the pitch that has been absolutely awful and nothing has been done. And you're like, you know, it's as much frustrating to be a player on a pitch with someone next to you that's having a shocker than actually... You know, I'd rather see the manager be tough and make those decisions. I remember when I was at Stoke, we played games against Chelsea. We were 1-0 down. Tony Pulis put an Algerian player who hadn't played much on the pitch, tried to chase it. Asaidi, he was called. 5 minutes later, we score. A minute later, he takes him back off, puts a defender on. And it's you know, you feel for the guy. And it's not fair, but the manager's there to win games, makes the tough decisions. So I quite like what Arteta's doing. And he's setting that team up with those tough decisions. He's drawing a line in the sand.
I want to know what the response was in the change room afterwards when he got taken off and he came off after the game again, coming on and then going off again. Was there a reaction in the change room? What did Pulis do?
Yeah, again, he never had that connection that, like what you were talking about when Mourinho going over, taking an arm around a player, explaining. It's a tough business. We all know that. I think we were a few players that just went over and gave him a pat on the back. But then we got the result and everyone is happy. And sadly, that's what sometimes happens.
Tommy, were you at Sunderland with Lee Clark when he kicked the water bucket when he got subbed?
It rings a bell.
Remember
but,
that? Remember the old before physios actually became proper physios, knew what they're doing. Remember the old bucket and sponge when it was half full of water on the side of the bench? Lee Clark got subbed off by Peter Reid and he wasn't happy. Clark, he walked past Peter Reid, shugged him away, and he went to kick the water bucket, which was obviously half full of water, and his foot went straight into the water bucket. And remember the physio trying to get his foot out of it, and then Peter Reid was able to grab him, and they had a massive ding-dong on the side of the field. You were probably still playing the game, Tommy. I was on the bench and witnessed it all, so there you go.
Were you on the bench or were you in the stand watching? Cause you, like,
I was on the bench, Schwartz. I was a young kid. I was on the bench, ready to make my debut.
He had played in the reserves the day before. Yeah. For
Moving on.
I had too much coffee. Jeez, Bridgie. Yeah, well, there you go. So it seems like the consensus is that it's a good... It shows character from a manager to be able to do that. And I think Mikel Arteta, being a modern manager, he's played under Pep. Something strikes me like he'd be the type to explain it to the player afterwards. But Tavares, chucking a tantrum, it never looks good. We've seen it, some of the classic ones that we've seen at Premier League clubs, even players refusing to go on. Remember the Carlos Tevez incident as well. I guess this is what happens with you footballers. You guys are, you know, a little bit... You can be quite prima donna sometimes. Yes, Shorty?
Well, a couple of seasons ago with Arrizabalaga at Chelsea, yes, with Sarri as the manager, refusing to go off before the penalty shootout. So
exactly.
You know, it's happened many times before, and I'm sure it will continue to happen in the future.
Yeah, it was a strange one nonetheless, but it was a tough week for Arsenal because even in the WSL, which we were showing here live on Optus, the women's team... Oh, yeah. Has been flying high on top of the league, absolutely smashing it. They'd only conceded 3 goals up until this point, and they played Birmingham, who are on the bottom, hadn't won a game, had only scored 4 all season, and Birmingham beats them 1-0. And I guess that's why we love football. Yes, Schwartzy?
The best thing is about that one, Birmingham hadn't won a home game in over 400 days.
Yeah. Crazy, right?
Insane. Yeah. Arsenal's lost, what, four of the last five games as well, so they're obviously in a really bad run at the moment. But Birmingham City, incredible result.
Yeah, unbelievable.
I'm still celebrating both Arsenal teams losing. I'm just having a wait.
Well, the problem with the Arsenal Arsenal against Nottingham Forest was Arsenal turned up like Real Madrid but played absolutely like a pub team. Yeah.
Quoting Roy Keane there, I think.
Absolutely, and I agree with him. He's absolutely right.
He's spot on.
It was a poor week for Arsenal, but it got me thinking about that. Like, how much does that affect you as a player when you are flying high on top? You're playing a team that you definitely should win, whether it is in a cup game and you're playing a lower opposition, or it is you're at the top of the table. Bridget, I don't know if you've really been at the top of the table, but you're playing someone at the bottom.
I was top of the Premier League at Christmas in 1999-2000. Top of the Premier League.
Ouch.
Tell me, give me a call when you get a Premier League contract, right? Shut up.
But how much does it play on your mind? Has it ever happened to you that you've just completely underestimated the opposition and it's come back to haunt you?
I'm not taunting you. Yes, it has. You know, this is the magic of the cup, you know. That's why it was being great being back here and actually witnessing some of them lower leagues. And, you know, there was a lot of upsets. Kidderminster Harry are getting a great result as well. I saw their manager celebrating with the players. The joy of the cup is it doesn't matter what is on paper and the teams and the names that are down there. It's all about up here. If you go in with the right attitude and you want to be professional and put on a performance, then you'll get the job done if you are the higher level team. If you go in with any form of arrogance, and you know, I've been at a club in Leeds United where we did get knocked out of the cup by a lower league opposition, and we went in with the wrong attitude. We were flying high in the Premier League, flying high in Europe, and you go up against a lesser team, two divisions below you, and mate, you go with the wrong arrogance and attitude, you're going to get smacked, because it is their FA Cup day for these lower teams. It is their mainstay. And they go in physically prepared, nowhere near the class and the level that they should be playing up against, but they go in with this thing. And this mind is a very powerful thing when you get it switched on.
Did it ever happen to you, Tommy? Did you ever bottle it against a team that you should have beaten in the cup?
I think the worst games that you played was when you played away at those smaller grounds, smaller clubs. And the pitch was, you know, not the greatest. And then the quality advantage that you have is taken out. And you know then that, you know, everything is equal in respect of, you know, their fit as well. You know, even though it's League Two or League One, you know, they can run forever. And they tend to be better at tackling than some of the fancy players in the Premier League. You know, again, those games were always the toughest. And I remember a few times being knocked out where, you know, you don't want to read the papers the day after for sure, because you know yourself as well, the attitude wasn't right.
Is the FA Cup, is kind of a weird thing over there where the FA Cup still does mean so much to the fans, but there's this frustration because sometimes the managers maybe don't take it as seriously as the fans take it, and they rest players and they play their youth players. They take it as an opportunity to promote a youth player. Whereas for the fans, the FA Cup still is the oldest competition in England and one of the most prestigious. Is there this disconnect at the moment over there in the UK, Schwartzy?
You know what it is? It's like a Newcastle-Burnley scenario and in terms of what's the most important situation? What's the important league? You know, where are our priorities? We need to stay in the league.
It's all about the money.
What's that?
It's all about the money.
Of course. So
it's
staying in the league.
There's not a lot of prize money for the FA Cup.
As wonderful as the FA Cup is, which it is, it's incredible. It's incredible to play in as a player. I loved playing in. We got knocked out by Tranmere Rovers when I was playing for Middlesbrough. It was at the time when they had that really long throw all the time. And they knocked out someone else in the
Challenger, Challenger?
Yeah. Unbelievable throw, and they knocked it. I think they beat us 2-1. Talk about what you said, Thomas, there on pitches at the time. They were just literally, was more dirt than there was grass on it. tight little stadium. There's no excuses, but what I'm saying is it's the environment, the atmosphere, it's the moment, it's the underdog against the bigger team, and the changes that you make. So fringe players, some fringe players are annoyed they've actually got to go play those games because they know it's going to be it's almost like a lose-lose situation. Unless you play incredibly well, there's always room to be criticised. And if you don't win, you know, obviously it's an open field day, you know, of criticism. And then there's a couple of players that are regulars who might get left behind because they go, right, have a rest, don't have to travel. So there's all these combinations of things. But as a player, I have to say, I love playing the FA Cup, and I always wanted to play all the games. Wonderful tournament. But I think, like I said, it's about prioritising what is the most important thing for the club. And as we all know, staying so Premier League survival far outweighs anything else.
But what I will say, this FA Cup at the moment, this round of fixtures with the Premier League teams that have been in, there has not been teams that have really played lesser squads. Manchester United had to due to COVID, but there's a lot of teams running on their lower numbers due to sicknesses and COVID issues. You know, the game we're watching at this moment that's live is Manchester United, Aston Villa. Both teams having a right good go. Newcastle United had to put a very good team out. Burnley put a very strong team out. Newcastle were beaten in their own stadium on a lovely surface with their first team squad out to their maximum capacity. Where you find the fans get annoyed at is in the League Cup. I think there's a lot more teams are not bothered by the League Cup. You'll find a lot of changes. I still think the FA Cup has won its glory back, and managers and players and owners of the clubs have gone, yeah, there's less money at stake, but this is the FA Cup. Let's give it the credit it deserves. I think it's got back to that a good status, because it did lose its credibility several years ago. But I think they've treated very respectfully this season.
I think the League Cup's changed a bit now. I think the League Cup is almost for all the rest of the teams, almost like, we're not going to win that, because Man City take that very seriously. And because Man City have been taking it really seriously, the rest are starting to. It's changed, the League Cup. It's the first trophy you can win. And I think, correct me if I'm wrong, but what I can remember, Jose Mourinho was probably the first one to say that was the benchmark trophy that I wanted to win. It's the first trophy you could win. It was the first bit of silver. And if we can win that, it's going to set the tone. And more likely, we're going to go on and win the league, which Chelsea did each time. So it's evolved a little bit. The FA Cup, you look at Arsenal. Arsenal put a mixture out, like most of the bigger teams did. But Arsenal's mixture just wasn't good enough, and the performance of the team just wasn't good enough. They were way below par. I don't even think they registered one single shot on target, which is appalling, really. And Forest deserved to win, I have to say. I watched the game, and Forest were very, very good. Jed Spence actually down the right fullback position. He's on loan for Middlesbrough. He was at Fulham Academy in the same team my son was. So I know him as a 10-year-old. Got released by Fulham, and then ended up signing for Middlesbrough, kind of in and out of the side, and then found himself going out on loan because he couldn't get game time. And now all of a sudden, there's a lot of talk of him potentially going back. And I thought he was absolutely outstanding. He was the best player on the park against Arsenal.
Yeah, and just on that point, actually, do you think the Europa League qualification has added anything to these tournaments, or do you think it's not as important? Because the teams that end up winning it are usually fighting for Champions League anyway.
Yeah.
I think it's a bit more of an incentive, yeah. Definitely.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, it's
definitely.
It's a massive challenge anyway. Like people say, I don't. Maybe. I still don't think the bigger clubs are happy if they get knocked out, because I think they all think with the size of squads they've got and the quality of squads they've got, it still should be enough to get through the lesser opposition. Mm. So, I still think that bigger clubs feel that the FA Cup is important.
Yeah,
but obviously, winning the league and doing well in Europe is probably supersedes winning the FA Cup. But I think it's a close third, at least, behind winning the league or finishing really high in the league and, say, doing really well in the Champions League.
Yeah.
Not necessarily Europa League or anything like that.
And I also think that it's becoming more and more black and white for managers as well. So you've got to put everything on the line to win whatever trophy you can win. I don't think you can take anything lightly in this day and age.
I think with a group of teams at the top now, you're right. So, you know, you look at it right now, the Premier League race is really between three teams. And it's probably, at the moment, it's kind of one and the other two are hanging on just at the moment, right? So the rest is then up for grabs. So, and they're the things that I don't think any of the teams can take for granted. You can't take the League Cup for granted. You can't take the FA Cup for granted, nor can you take Europa League, whatever it is, for granted. And that's where you can come unstuck, I think.
And well, I guess that made the League Cup all the more important. Man City have dominated it, but they were bombed out of this one by West Ham. So now all of a sudden it presented a great opportunity for some other big clubs to get that silverware halfway through the season. But it's been in the news recently because Liverpool's game against Arsenal did get postponed because of the COVID cases. And some further investigation has shown that there was only one positive COVID case. It was a lot of coincidentally false positives just in time when Mane and Salah have gone to the African Cup of Nations. Bridgie, what have we made for this? Is there a conspiracy theory that we can jump on here?
I'm not going to get involved in conspiracy theories. What I am going to say is that you can bend the rules and twist the rules and maximise them without going over the edge and becoming illegal or dodgy. And I think that's what's happened in this case. So that's all I'm going to say. They've maximised their ability to get the game called off, to delay it for a later date. Have they broke the laws? I don't think they have, but they've used it to the maximum of their opportunities. And if there is, I'd do exactly the same thing, because when you've got two men that are in the leading goal scoring charts, and you know Mo Salah that many clear, you need them back. So yeah, I would have done exactly the same thing as I could.
Am I not right in saying that they're independently tested? You know, that it's not the club that actually tests the players. It's an independent company or something.
I wouldn't know enough about it. You guys are over there. I don't know.
Yeah, I actually don't know either. So that would be interesting to
know. Because I met up with Kasper Schmeichel while I was in Denmark, and he was saying that my Danish friend.
He said
that they actually had two or three guys from some sort of agency there to test the players. You know, so it wasn't the club. So I presume that's the same for every club, just to make sure that, yeah, obviously nobody sort of gets around the rules.
I'd be surprised if it were just the club dealing with it. I'd be surprised if they didn't have someone overseeing it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and the company that have just gone on the stocks and share market have just gone through the roof because they've just made them. They've had a massive deposit of money put into their accounts.
Whoops, what are you trying to say, Bridgie? I thought you didn't want to go into conspiracy theories. Now you've taken another.
I thought we finished the podcast.
There's a few holes being dug this morning.
Oh, wow. So. Liverpool fans, close your laptop screens now or whatever you're listening on. Because, yeah, no, it has come out of nowhere, but maybe they are a little bit worried about this Arsenal team that are hunting for that trophy. Nonetheless, Chelsea are up 2-0 on Tottenham, so we'll see how that one turns out.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
You mentioned Jose Mourinho before. I wanted to get your opinion, guys, on Jose, because the break in the Premier League has given us an opportunity to go around Europe, watch some of the other football. Jose Mourinho, in the space of 4 days, conceded 3 goals to AC Milan, lost that game, conceded 4 goals yesterday to Juventus and lost that game. Bridgie, has Jose lost his shine as a manager?
He's definitely lost something. There's no doubt about it. I mean, you know, Swartz, you worked with him, didn't you?
I did, yes.
Yeah, so Swartz's worked with him. He's seen how class and, you know, how quality he was. I don't know what he has lost, whether it's the ability to go with the tactics of your Guardiolas and your Klopps. I don't know. I don't see him work on a day-to-day basis. Has he lost the ability to have the same impact in building relationships with the players these days as were back in the day? You know, we know life has changed with social media and things. I don't know, but there's definitely something going on, because this is not the kind of style of play that you expect from a Mourinho team when they're conceding so many goals in the manner that they were doing it, being 3-1 up to lose 4-3. That'll be hurting him, and I wouldn't like to have been in the dressing room after the game, because I'm sure he would have flown off the handle.
Yeah, Schwartz, did he have a click in him, Jose Mourinho, when he'd lose a game like that, or is he always a calm character?
Now, you know what? It was a combination, because he certainly had it, absolutely. Mm. And there were moments. I found it really hard to read him. I didn't know, because there were moments at Chelsea when I was there. I mean, obviously, I had him for 18 months when I was there. And there were moments when there was a bad performance and you just thought, right, he's going to tear shreds out of us as we go in the change room, right? And you go in there and you sit down and you're thinking, right, who is he going to go for? So-and-so is out of, yeah, he struggled. He's going to struggle. He's going to tear shreds out of him. He didn't. He was right. That's done with 45 minutes. Now, this is what we need to do to win the game. Forget about that. That's behind us. And then he'd address it later on. And then other times you thought, actually, did all right today. You know, did all right in that first half or moment in the game. That was actually all right. Got away with it there. It's fine. And then he'd come in and just fly off the handle at people. So it was. I found him really, really difficult to read at times. You just didn't know what you were going to get. And I suppose as a player, maybe... listen, I think everything he does, there is a thought process. I think there is certainly a tactical ploy that he instills. Mm-hmm. I think he thinks things through and goes, right, gets a feeling from everyone. Okay, what are you guys feeling? I'm thinking, I'm feeling this. Right, there's got to be a moment. I've got to explode. I've got to let them know that this isn't good enough. And I think it can be the slightest thing. And I think he does it to make sure people are on their toes all the time.
Yeah. Well, there's no doubt. I think a few people might have copped a bollock in there after two straight losses. Pretty much puts Roma way out of the title race and starts to put them further and further away from that Champions League race as well. Tommy, we go over to Spain. Real Madrid flying high on top of the league now. Vinicius Jr. during the week came out as the highest, most valuable footballer in the world at the moment. Vinicius Jr. is valued at 166 million euros. Is he a little bit underrated because we maybe don't watch him week in, week out like we do a lot of these Premier League players? Is he the best young player in the world?
You know, he's definitely up there for sure. You know, I think I'll rank a Haaland, you know, probably ahead of him. But, you know, again, we've seen...
Probably, definitely.
Definitely, okay. But, yeah, I think, you know, we were sitting there, you know, last year when we were, you know, watching the Champions League, and, you know, he was a difference maker in a lot of those games for Real Madrid. Yeah. But, you know, he also plays alongside Benzema, who's, again, you know, right on top of his game. He's just one of those players, a little bit like Sancho. You know, he can sort of drift in and out of games. I think he's showing more stability now than he probably did a year ago. But, you know, he's, for me, like a Haaland is again, ahead of him for sure as the most valuable player. But, you know, he's Brazilian. That always adds a little bit extra to it.
Brazilian tax.
Tommy's just mentioned a guy there, Sancho, that I never want to talk about ever again because you, Claude, put me and Swartz in an uncomfortable position last week about the Manchester United, Greenwood, Rashford and Sancho. Who would you pick, bench and sell? My God, I got
you
absolutely
got lit up.
Abused, yeah, you did. On yeah, Instagram and Twitter for saying I would drive Sancho to the airport and sell him. So I ain't talking about this guy ever again, man. I had a really depressing week.
The amount of people that said I'd drive Bridgie to the airport and get rid of him.
Yeah, that was brilliant. That was my fake account.
Loved
I did
it.
That. That's what it's all about.
I even think my wife commented and said the same thing.
Yeah, yeah. Understandably.
You know what it was? It was brilliant social media journalism from the guys here because they gave absolutely no context that we were playing a game where you had to sell one of those players. So people just thought
you
that
stitched
you've
us up.
Yeah. Look, it's a stitch up, but that's...
It was great. I loved
that's
it.
That's the game. That's the game nonetheless. And last one I want to stop at on our European adventure here, Schwartzy, is the Bundesliga. I know you love it. I know you itch to chat about it. Bayern Munich slipped up again against Borussia Mönchengladbach. So they lost to them in the league last season. They were dumped out of the cup 5-0 this season, and now they've lost again to them. Is that just their bogey side? And does that happen in football? Is there like sometimes one club which you just can't beat for some reason, they've got you figured out?
Yeah, I think there are teams that you know, you look at recent years' results and it haven't been particularly kind and you've struggled a little bit. Let's put it a little bit in perspective as well. Bayern had, I think they got about 11 players out, mm-hmm. COVID injuries. I think they got 6 or 7 players out with COVID alone, which... Obviously, it's huge. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 players out with COVID. So, I mean, even though they've got a top squad, I mean, they had Zubitzer playing at left back. Mm-hmm. They had Kimmich playing at centre half. You know, so, I mean, I'm making excuses for them. They still, I watched the first 45 minutes. They actually played okay, Bayern. Mm-hmm. And they're on the front foot, scored relatively early. Really good finish from Lewandowski. And it looked like at that moment in time, like, Gladbach might roll over a little bit and get a bit of a spanking, and then from nothing they score a goal, and then they get the second one shortly after. Two good goals actually, yeah. Two well worked goals, good finishes. Florian Neuhaus, tell you what a player he is. Mm. There've been a lot of talk of him potentially going to Bayern. He is a phenomenal player. So I'd be surprised if he is still at Gladbach next season. He played really, really well. It can be. You can come up against sides. Gladbach have been really inconsistent this season. They're about 11th on the table, maybe a little bit more now after that result. Mm. They've struggled so far with Adi Hütter as the manager. But I'm just going to say Bayern massively understrengthed.
Yeah. Yeah, and now it's 6 points the gap at the top. But I still think, you know, when Bayern Munich get in that position, they're probably the hardest team to catch in Europe. And you mentioned it. As soon as a player starts playing well, their next stop is Bayern Munich. It just feels like if they come calling, you always answer when it's Bayern on the phone. But on that point, we're going to talk a little bit more about transfers, about Australian players. It's been a little bit quiet with some of the Australians. But one of them, which has been making headlines, is Riley McGree, Tommy. A year and a half ago, he was signed by Charlotte, who weren't a club yet. They were in the process of being established in the MLS, and they signed Riley McGree. But in that time, he's really matured as a player. Good performances at the Olympics, great performances for Birmingham. They were very sad to see his contract come to an end. But now his biggest link has been Celtic Football Club, as well as a few other Champions League teams. It looks like Celtic is his destination. Is that a good move for Riley? And could he start in this team under Ange Postecoglou?
Would he be a starter week in, week out? Maybe not necessarily, certainly not to begin with, but he's certainly going to play a part. I mean, if Ange obviously likes him, he knows what he's going to get from him, he knows his qualities, he's obviously someone that is improving dramatically. And I think it fits the profile for Celtic at this moment in time. They're looking for, you know, good players at a bargain price because obviously their financial situation is a rebuild, all sorts of stuff. And Ange can probably get the best out of him. So I can see it working, and I can see it being a decent fit for them.
Do you think Riley McGree and Tom Rogic can both play in the same team? Or are they going to be head-to-head competition basically for the same position?
Could well be. Yeah, it could well be, and it could be one or the other. Yeah. You know, with Ange, Ange's not afraid to make those decisions either, is he? And I think with Tommy's actually been playing really, really well.
Yeah.
It's probably been, it's the best I've seen him play for quite a number of seasons now, I think, over a consistent period of time. I mean, it's not a huge amount of time at the moment, but for Tommy, it's finding that consistency, something that people have been most critical of when he played for the national team, hasn't played to the level that he played at Celtic. I think he's certainly improved a lot this season. I think Ange has had a big, big part to play in that, which is great for the Socceroos. And hopefully, if Riley goes there, hopefully Ange will find a way of playing the two of them together in the same team. And they do very, very well together.
Yes, America, I think, has evolved a lot. But, you know, Europe is where, you know, the future is. I think he's you know, again, he's only 23. A lot ahead of him. And then he gets to play under Ange, who brought him into the Australian squad, the Socceroos squad. So I think it's a huge, it'll be a huge, you know, opportunity for him. He's really matured. You know, I watched him a lot at Melbourne City. You know, he obviously burst onto the scene with that, you know, scorpion kick at Newcastle, and has improved a lot. He's consistent, a lot more now than he used to be. And he's that midfielder that can come from deep. His runs into the box are fantastic. And you know, it seems like he's built a little bit of body strength as well now, like to cope with the English game. And, you know, Celtic, again, play in Europe, play for championships. You know, I think he's coming to a club as well who's on the up. I think, you know, the players they've signed, the Japanese players, I think it's going to make a massive difference. So, Ange is doing a good job there, and it's a good place for him.
Yeah, just on that, Bridgie, we're chatting Ange Postecoglou looking like the most likely to seal the deal with Riley McGree, but that could be imminent. Besides that, he signed a new Irish prodigy, young teenage footballer there. He's also signed three Japanese players already in this window. And for a man that was only put on a 12-month contract, is this a good indication that Celtic see him there for the long term?
Yeah, I think it's absolutely huge to see them giving him that opportunity. Because it shows that they are believing in the product of football that he's producing, and it also shows that they believe in the players that he's brought in already. And I think that is absolutely huge for Ange Postecoglou, and you know he's getting a little bit more of a say in what he's doing, because that means he's got the backing. I know he's won the fans over. Journalists are still half and half out there. He's proven a lot of them wrong. There's still a lot of them just trying to make sure that they're on top of his, to keep him on his game. But as the coaching staff and the people behind the scenes, yeah, he's making huge waves, mate. And that is a great sign for me. And I hope Riley McGree comes off. I really do.
And Schwartz, because I always go to you as my Bundesliga expert, another Aussie that's been a little bit in the headlines is Aiden Hrustic, who, of course, plays his club football for Eintracht Frankfurt. It's a great club. It's a huge club to be at. But he's been in and out of that side now for 2 years. It's like we see him start, we see him put a good performance in, and he's relegated to the bench the following week. And there's a few Bundesliga clubs at the lower end of the table looking at him. I know Augsburg was mentioned as a heavy link with him. Is that the right move for? Has he got to look for regular football, or is it good enough being at a huge club like Frankfurt?
No, I think it's always best to be playing week in, week out. And he started against Bayern on the weekend. So, you know, it was a great opportunity for him to play again. And I think this season's been his most amount of times that he's been involved. He's played games. Huge opportunity for him. Big club. And that's always the debate, isn't it? Do you stay at a big club where everything is going, you know, everything is great around you, the environment, the quality of players around you and so forth, expectations, or do you go to a team that's a lesser club, but you're going to play week in, week out? And I was always one that was of the belief I wanted to go play somewhere. I wanted to go anywhere where I was going to play, certainly not in the latter stages of my career, but when I was, you know, through most of my career, I wanted to play week in, week out. And that's what I'd be doing. But, you know, listen, as long as he's playing and he's, you know, as an outfield player is slightly different to a goalkeeper, as we all know. You know, you don't have to play every week, but you have some involvement, like start every week. I mean, you want to play every week, but you don't necessarily have to start every week to get that regular football. So at the moment, you know, I think it's a really good club for him. It's just how he sees it moving forward. He sees he wants to go somewhere where he's guaranteed to be playing every week, where he's going to be more of a main man, then maybe it's to look elsewhere. Otherwise, I think for his development, I think it's still a great opportunity. That experience playing at a big club like Eintracht Frankfurt is massive.
And in a World Cup year, you talk about goalkeepers, Tommy. In a World Cup year, Matty Ryan, who's playing for Sociedad, sitting fourth in La Liga, it's great, but he's played two or three games in La Liga this season because it's very hard for him to move the number one out of his spot when he's in the form that he's in. For Matty Ryan, who's jumped clubs a lot in the last 2 years, he's our number one in a very important year for our country. Is the right move for him to stay, slug it out, hope for an opportunity? I mean, you don't want to say it, but maybe hope for a cheeky dislocated finger at training for the number one keeper or something? Or is the right move to move away and look for regular game time?
You know, you don't wish bad things on other people, but I think Schwartz has been in that situation where there's you have a little hope in the back of your head that something's going to happen. But you know, again, you know, he'll be the judge of it. You know, how close he feels. You know, there'll be plenty of games with the Aussie squad, and I think he's obviously in a good position. He's always produced when he's playing, so that counts in his favour. But, you know, in the longer term with the World Cup, and there's no leading to the World Cup. There's no real, the season's only, I think, break about a week before the World Cup starts. So there's not that big lead off of three or four friendly games to get into shape. So if the Socceroos hopefully qualify, that could be a problem if he's still in the same situation. So he has a decision to make for sure.
Yeah, I think that's key. I obviously, till the end of the season, he's there. Unless something pops up that is like an unbelievable opportunity for him to go play every week. I think he stays there until the end of the season, sees how it plays out. And then he has a decision to make in the summer. Because like Tommy was saying there, leading up to the World Cup, there isn't that time. There isn't opportunities really to go and play games to warm up. And if you're talking 18 months then almost, or say, you know, 17 months, only having played a handful of games, it's not the ideal scenario you want to be going into a World Cup.
Yeah, no, definitely not. It's going to be a bit of a different vibe now. And yeah, you've got to select your players based on who's playing week in, week out. Talk about World Cup qualification. Huge news that came out yesterday at the Juventus camp is that Federico Chiesa, arguably Italy's strongest player in the last year or two, won Italian Footballer of the Year, has done his ACL. So he'll be out for those qualifying games where they play North Macedonia and Portugal.
Just
massive loss.
It's got worse for you, hasn't it? It's just
massive
worse
loss.
For you,
Schwartzy.
Yeah. I mean,
that one
feel
hurts.
For you, mate. I can feel it coming through the monitor on the computer that you are absolutely bricking it.
That one hurts a lot. Yeah, not going to lie. I think look, we won't get to that one. We'll get to that one when the qualifiers come. They're on Optus as well, of course, late March. Can't wait for those ones. But for now, let's look forward to this weekend because the Premier League returns and it's an awesome weekend for it to come back. Bridgie, you're coming home at the wrong time because football's heating up over there and Man City take on Chelsea just days after Chelsea play in the League Cup. Is this win or title over for Tommy Tuchel?
Yes, I just had a good chat with Schwartzy yesterday. Went and met him down in London. We had our half-season review. Not going to give too much away. That'll be coming up on Optus Sport and the app very soon to see what we thought on teams and players and managers so far this season. I think this game is crucial. Manchester City sitting pretty at the top. Claude, you'll be happy to know I've stuck by my guns. I'm going to give one away. I've said Chelsea will chase them down, and this is the game to do it.
I'm surprised you didn't change your mind again, because like yesterday when we did it, you know, we gave through our answers, right, and we're going through it all, and Bridgie's like, he's not given the answer that he originally said. He's made up another one. It's like, yeah,
let's not give too much away.
I had to pull him out. Yeah. I had to pull him up on it. And
how, say, how many points? How many points has he, had he had by that time?
We hadn't had any. Had a coffee.
No, and well, no, we were. No. We had one. We were having one at that time. I mean, he is a bit of a lightweight these days, let's be honest.
Well, yeah, it's a massive game, Schwartz. Your former club against Man City. Can they beat Pep Guardiola's City in the form that they're currently in?
I'm going to say yes, they can beat them. Mm. Is it a massive task? Absolutely. But I think it doesn't matter what form either teams are in, to go to City and beat them is tough for any team. You know, it's going to be an incredible game. I'm actually going to the game. So I'm excited about that. I'm working on the game, so I'll be pitch side as well, so it'll be brilliant.
Can't wait to listen to you on that.
No, well, you won't be listening to me, mate, unless you're going somewhere else on the way home and maybe listening to another broadcaster. We're not going to mention it.
No.
But you know what? I think it's a huge game. I think, yeah, it's almost at that moment whereby if it's not the season's over with. It's not that Chelsea can't win it if they lose to City. It'll just be another sort of, I suppose, a statement of intent that we are going to win this, and you're going to have to do something unbelievably special to catch us, and we're going to have to drop off massively.
What more incentive do the Chelsea players need to go out there and perform against a team that are top of the league? It's make or break. They've got to go out there and put on a special performance as a collective and all as individuals, because they know this is the challenge that everybody is wanting to do, and Man City have thrown the gauntlet down to the rest of the league, and this is huge for me. Come on, Chelsea.
Wow, never thought I'd hear that. And Tommy, does Lukaku start up top?
I think he will. You know, again, you know, a lot has been made of, you know, I think it was a huge mistake they did making that interview, and I think that's also a huge part of this, that Chelsea needs to bury that, and what better way of doing that with a good performance, maybe a Lukaku goal and a win against Man City, and I think the league, you know, it'd be good for the league as well. Mm. You know, if they stay within 6-7 points of Man City instead of I think it could be 13 points if they lose, so that's going to be game over.
So we're all Chelsea fans, right? So we all want Chelsea to win. I mean, that's what I'm feeling.
Yeah.
I'm
feeling that
you all want Chelsea to win.
I'm doing it for the league and because I went for Chelsea at the start.
I'm the same.
Yeah. Wow. Very rare for that to happen. Just shows how good City have been, really. It's a testament to them that everyone hates them and wants them to lose this game. It's going to be a cracking game nonetheless. A great way to bring the Premier League back on Optus. And then later in the weekend, Aston Villa, Tommy, your old boys, host Man United this time. And I find this happens so much in football, where you play a team during the week in the cup and then you got them again in the league. And psychologically, how does that play on you when you've just lost during the week and now you got to play them again?
The massive difference is they'll be at Villa Park. Coutinho will be playing. By the sounds of it, he's just cleared his medical. So there'll be a fantastic atmosphere. And again, you know, even in the game today, yes, Man United have just won against Villa 1-0. But, you know, Villa had enough chances in the first half, should have scored two disallowed goals. I still think Man United got too many problems out of the back, give too many chances away. And I'm pretty confident that Villa is going to win this one.
Yes, I'm sticking with Tommy. I thought the performance tonight in the FA Cup over here that we just watched, I thought they were awesome. Got their tactics spot on. Stevie Gerrard had a few players that were just not quite firing. You know, Watkins has missed a few chances tonight. I think on another day, he gets the goals. It was 1-0 to Villa last time, I do believe, in the league.
Yep.
At the home ground, I think Tommy's absolutely spot on. He has nailed it. Coutinho will be back. They'll be at home. They'll take so much confidence from this game tonight, even though they got beat. And I felt very harshly done by from some of the decisions that went against them. So I'm rooting for Aston Villa in this one.
Does Coutinho start?
I hope so.
Yeah.
Oh, so does he drop Buendia? Or does he play both of them?
That's why Stevie Gerrard gets paid the big bucks to make the big decisions.
I jump on the fence, mate. Come on, he's got a question. I can't answer it.
Not bad from you.
I think he'll try to play both of them, won't he? He'll try to fit both of them in just to not start unsettling that change room, you know.
Did he drop in England? Is he dropping Ings?
I don't think he'll start him because he's only literally just signed, isn't he? I don't know. I've got a feeling he's not going to start on the weekend.
It's a good opportunity to get the roar of the park as well when you're bringing him on in the 56th minute as well and just give that extra boost.
Yeah.
What about Cristiano Ronaldo, Schwartzy? News coming out, it also depends how much you want to read into it, that he's called an emergency meeting with his agent to sort out the situation at Man United. Didn't play this morning, and still the question begs, are they better without him?
Isn't it brilliant though? Like, apparently there's been an emergency call for a meeting. Like, so honestly, seriously, where does that come from? Honestly, like, someone, people just love
the Twitterverse. The Twitterverse. Yeah, it's great. It fuels this conversation, though.
He's just tweeted saying, "Yeah, I'm going to call my agent. I want an emergency meeting with him." And then everyone's going, "Oh, he's doing it." It's like, seriously, it's great. Makes great headlines, doesn't it?
It does.
Listen. Where would United be without Ronaldo's goals this season?
Out of the Champions League.
Out of the Champions League. Yeah.
Yeah. So for all the criticism, and I understand there's some criticism I think is justifiable. I think you certainly can question how does Ronaldo fit in the Manchester United side. I think once you've made the decision to bring him back, you know that he's not going to be happy sitting on the bench. So you've got to play to his strengths. You've got to almost set the team up. You have to set the team up to compensate for his weaknesses and get him in the position where he's best, and that's in that 8-yard box to get on the end of things, because he will score.
And Ralph Raniak will not allow that. He's all about the team ethic rather than an individual and fitting people around him. And I think he's got a huge point.
But he can get away with it, can't he? Because he came after Ronaldo's there. Ronaldo's not the long-term future of the club. So in that side of things, if they feel that, right, they're going to stick with Ranieri, go with him and go with his philosophy, and this is going to change things, then once they've made that decision to bring him, they've got to go with what he actually suggests, what he thinks.
Well, I wouldn't be. I mean, he didn't feature this morning, but like you said, Ronaldo, if he's in the team, if he is fit, he usually has to start. So it'll be interesting to see playing the same team. Of course, there's a few differences in personnel, but playing the same team twice in a row with and without Ronaldo will be very interesting to see what the result is. Tommy, the last game, which I think for us is Monday morning here in Oz, it's a North London derby, Tottenham taking on Arsenal. And Tottenham find themselves a couple points behind Arsenal in the race for the top four, but they have two games in hand. A win here would put them above them with that two-game buffer, and that would be a huge step to the top four, right?
Yeah, and I think it's probably about 3 or 4 weeks back, I made the big call that I thought Tottenham would finish ahead of Arsenal. So for all the hype that Arsenal's getting, and well-deserved, I think, Schwartzy, when you have small successes, you've got to. Hey,
I never do that.
You've got to enforce it.
I never say anything like that.
No, I seriously think he's made a massive difference. I think he's short off. They're not conceding as many goals. There's still room for improvement, but they're going to sit back. They're going to try to hit Arsenal where they're probably the weakest in that transition phase, because Arsenal will want the ball. And it's going to be a good match, I think. You know, Arsenal has improved, and so has Tottenham. So, but being at home, I think Tottenham will draw the 3 points in that one.
Bridgie, for Tottenham, they play a League Cup game, which they're 2-0 down against Chelsea, and that's just days before this game. Whereas Arsenal get a decent rest, I guess, seeing as though what's happening with the schedule against Liverpool. What would you say is the most important thing here for Tottenham? Do they try and overturn that 2-0 deficit against Chelsea and play a full team and go for broke in that one? Or do you accept defeat there in the League Cup semi-final? And do you focus everything on the North London derby?
I'd be ringing somebody up at Liverpool to find out how they managed to get their game called off and seeing if Tottenham can do that against Chelsea and then go into the derby with a full set of fresh legs. I don't know, mate. I'm going to sit in the fence of this one, but I'm going to say Tottenham will win. I would write off the League Cup. I'll be honest with you. I think Conte will be focusing now on that game against Arsenal. I think he knows how important that is. It's going to be very, very hard to turn that deficit around against Chelsea. No shadow of a doubt. So whether he plays a lesser team, if it was me personally, I'll be playing a lesser team and getting everybody prepared for that Arsenal match, mate. That's what I would be, because that fourth spot in the Champions League is huge for Conte.
I guess the other spanner in the works there is that Chelsea have a really quick turnaround, a far quicker turnaround between their game against Spurs and their game against City. So maybe they'll play a lesser team, and it could be an opportunity there for Spurs to turn around and 2-0.
There's two ways you can look at that as well. We've talked about, do managers and fans want trophies? It could be that you might think that Chelsea may turn out a lesser team. They've got that, like you say, against City. And do that, and does Conte go full strength and try and turn it around? This is the joy of football. There's so many different outcomes and opinions that I would just write it off. Is that in Conte's mind? And coming from a Spurs fan, I want to see Spurs win something before I die. So it would be nice to see that, you know.
I think they're going to go for it, because listen, they're at home. 2-0 is a precarious scoreline, as we all know.
Yeah.
If Spurs really go for it and they get a goal, you know, in a reasonable time in the game, Chelsea could get a little bit nervous. Both having in the back of their mind the games coming up. But I think Spurs, two games in hand over Arsenal. Conte will see this as another opportunity. Look, they're one game away from a Wembley final. Why would you give it up already?
Yeah.
You know, exactly, so right. I think he will still go strong. You got to go for it.
You got to back yourself. You're a big team at the end of the day. Absolutely. You've got 90 minutes is long enough to turn around a 2-0 deficit. Yeah. So,
100%. But I reckon they'll lose both of them.
That's why we love it. Plenty of football.
The pantomime continued. Brilliant. That was great.
Plenty of football coming your way on Optus Sport. Guys, that's all we got time for on the Gegen Pod next week. We're going to be joined again, hopefully, by these three legends. Tommy's back home, so he's got no excuse. Bridgie will be back home by next week. Schwartz, you never know where he'll be. Will he be in Spain? Will he be out and about sinking wines there in London? But nonetheless, guys, it's always a pleasure catching up with you. And for everyone listening from home, the football kicks off Wednesday morning. Already there's Premier League, Southampton taking on Brentford. Everton, you guys can rest easy because your game's been postponed against Leicester, so you don't have to get battered again. West Ham Norwich on Thursday morning, and then Chelsea City is that feature game Saturday night. The football kicks on right all the way through to the North London derby on Monday morning. Tommy, Bridgie and Mark, thanks so much for joining me, and until next week, guys, enjoy the football. We'll catch you next time. Schwartz is knocking his microphone over. He's got a lot to say.
By the way, that's not the first time he's dropped something in his career. His hands are terrible.
So predictable, Mr. Bridges.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.